The Fan on Demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, my producer, Behind the Glass, who's actually going to join us on a rare occasion. I love having Igor Rodriguez in studio with me. He will join us in the second segment. The other man behind the glass, keeping me in time, probably going to throw some crazy music that I don't like in the middle of a rant. Dylan Brown, Boston Red Sox faithful, Celtics faithful. Is your team leading the division right now? Wow. Yeah, we got, you know, before I came on the air, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, I want to say thanks to Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and to all the executives here from, you know, that have come and gone. Today marks my 6-year anniversary talking mixed martial arts on mainstream radio. And there's people on Twitter that are thanking me. No, thank these guys for allowing me the opportunity back then to come on here and bring you the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. Obviously, it spawned my career in television and on it goes. And by the way, my 6-year anniversary will be in August for sports at the television side. So it's a good year for me. Very happy. Got to knock something off my bucket list earlier today. As if you visited Showdown's Corner, by the way, sportsnet.ca, scroll down, you'll see my ugly face. It'll say Showdown's Corner. Click it. All the latest and greatest, my opinion, in terms of stuff happening in the world of mixed martial arts. I mentioned that today I knocked something off my bucket list. I got into the sport in 1993, November 1993, sitting in a bar, Midtown Toronto, and we were watching a Leaf game at the time. And then after that, some fighting thing came on. It was the UFC. It was obviously UFC 1, and I was enthralled. I didn't move from my seat, and I watched it from beginning to end, and I haven't stopped watching it ever since. And I remember Hoist Gracie. I remember Ken Shamrock vividly competing. Those are two guys that got me into training, that got me into... Because at the time, I had a bit of a boxing and a little bit of a kickboxing background, a little tiny bit of wrestling, but no submissions, nothing. And I just freaked out when I saw these guys compete. I wanted to hit like Ken Shamrock. I wanted to submit people like Hoist Gracie. And then later, Frank Shamrock came around and wanted to be like Frank Shamrock when I was in the gym. I wanted to have that explosive speed and be well-rounded. And watching all their fights, or at least Ken and Frank's fights in Japan, really got me back into training. I really enjoyed my early days training in mixed martial arts. I eventually met Frank Shamrock in the late 90s and got to roll with him and train with him in Richmond Hill when he came up and did a seminar. So that was something on the bucket list, checked off. A few years later, met Hoist Gracie, interviewed him, really good guy, checked that off. Never, ever had a chance to meet Ken Shamrock until earlier today. The guys over at Inner Circle Agency brought Ken Shamrock in. He's doing a huge media thing, and stop number one was with me, with yours truly here at Sportsnet earlier today. We don't have any clips to play for you because it's going to air on Monday, but the interview was apparently supposed to be only 20 minutes. I forgot. It was an hour long. So I don't know what the guys over at UFC Central on the television side are going to do with that interview, only because we can't. It's going to have to be a 3-minute segment for Monday's UFC Central. I don't know if there'll be a part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I don't know if they'll put the interview online, but hopefully they do. It was a great conversation with Ken Shamrock. Check that off my bucket list. Great anniversary gift for yours truly. All right. Lots to talk about in the world of mixed martial arts, but we'll focus on the UFC show going down this Saturday at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. Jordan Mean will be making his second appearance in the octagon. As we all know, he made his octagon debut against Dan Miller in Montreal in a spectacular performance. What a great scrap that was. He looked absolutely incredible and takes a fight on short notice now, replacing Dan Hardy, taking on Matt Brown. And we'll hear from Jordan Mean momentarily. We'll also hear from two guys in the co-main event and the two guys in the championship fight. Obviously, the co-main event is a heavyweight tilt between Daniel Cormier and Frank Mir, and the main event is between Gilbert Melendez, Strikeforce lightweight champion, or at least the last Strikeforce lightweight champion, taking on the current UFC champion in Benson Henderson, the champ at 155 pounds. Later on in the show, third segment, third round, whatever you want to call it, we're joined by MMA junkies John Morgan, who I think is in San Jose covering this because he always does stuff on the West Coast, or they make the poor guy travel around the world. Yeah, poor guy traveling to Sweden. I know, last weekend or 2 weeks ago he was in Sweden, Igor. Yeah, well, we're here in Toronto freezing. He's in Sweden, and you know exactly where I'm going with this conversation. We'll hear from John Morgan, get his thoughts from the card itself, and different things in general from the world of mixed martial arts, because this was some crazy stuff. I don't know if you guys heard. Like I said, go to Showdown's Corner. You heard of Josh Rosenthal, mixed martial arts referee, pleaded guilty. I don't know what the exact term is, but he pleaded guilty. They found over 1,300 plants of marijuana, and he was going to distribute this stuff, estimated street value of $6 million. Yoshihiro Akiyama, Sexyama's manager, is in big trouble, stealing over like 140, 150K from his client. I mean, crazy, crazy news from the world of mixed martial arts. But let's get on to this UFC show, that, which, by the way, you can catch on Sportsnet 1 this Saturday. We've got the prelims on Sportsnet.ca, more prelims on Sportsnet 1, and then the full card on Sportsnet 1. First person we're going to hear from, you actually heard, if you missed the TV show this week, we'll play him again, Jordan Mean. He gets ready to take on Matt Brown. Here's my conversation with Jordan Mean. Jordan, what was going through your mind after Bruce Buffer officially confirmed you won your Octagon debut?
I was super excited, you know, seeing, having my hand raised and having Buffer, you know, yelling your name. It's super exciting. And then on top of that, to get a finish was something else and one of my goals I have. So, you know, giving myself a pat on the back and yeah, just super, super excitement.
Have you had a chance to watch the fight and analyze your performance?
Yeah, I have watched it and watched the armbar escape and listened to the commentary, and it was pretty entertaining, and I'm happy with the performance.
Well, you wasted no time accepting your next fight, which goes down this Saturday night versus the immortal Matt Brown, who's riding a 4-fight win streak. Give us your thoughts on your opponent.
Yeah, Matt Brown, he's a solid guy. I've been a fan of his for a while, you know, watching him on The Ultimate Fighter, watching him, you know, his last fight against Mike Swick. He's a gritty guy. He comes forward all the time, and he's looking for that knockout. And, you know, looking at his record, he has some submission losses, and maybe I can look to expose that, maybe with a choke or something along those lines. But I think fighting fire with fire is going to be the key to success and just coming forward the way he does.
Interesting, fighting fire with fire. All right, let's talk about what a victory over a guy like Matt Brown does for your ranking. Where do you think it puts you with the rest of the guys at 170 pounds?
I'm not too sure. That's a tough question. I think he's around, you know, maybe 15, you know, somewhere around that mark. And I don't see why I wouldn't replace that position with my name.
I agree. That's exactly how rankings should be. But let's move on. Did you know that your sister sent me a message on Twitter, which, by the way, we profiled right here? She asked me if I believed you and Rory McDonald will one day have a rematch.
Absolutely. I thought that was hilarious when I heard that she got on the show. That's wicked. Jaden was tweeting it, and a good question to ask. Yeah, that would be awesome. His career is going really well for himself, and I'm trying to, you know, make my career go just as well for me. So if the paths cross again, I don't see why not.
Well, we'll see if those stars align, as that has main event written all over it. But on Saturday night, the main event for the card you'll be competing on features Ben Henderson taking on Gilbert Melendez. Who do you think has the edge?
I think Melendez is a top three guy, definitely, in the entire organization. But I think Ben Henderson's going to take it, and I think he's just more versatile. And the way he's looking recently, it's pretty exciting, and he's fun to watch. So I think Henderson's going to take it.
And I agree. I think Benson does have the edge. Ben Henderson, that fight with Gilbert Melendez is going to be sick. We'll get more to that with Igor Enriquez and John Morgan now when they come on the air with me. Do you guys notice how funny I sound on television as opposed to radio? Like, it's a completely different conversation when I'm talking to someone via satellite versus on the phone. Anyways, I thought I sound like an idiot, but that's just my opinion. Thank you to Jordan Mean. Thank you to UFC Canada for setting that up. And Jordan Mean's going to have a tough fight against Matt Brown, the immortal, who's riding this 4-fight win streak. He's had this, you know, his career sort of just elevated all over again. So, you know, am I picking Jordan Mean to win? I don't make picks anymore, but if there's an edge, I think he does have the edge in all realms. I think, you know, I'm not saying anything specific about Jordan's heart, because Matt Brown's heart is unbelievable. So that's one thing he'll have to deal with, is if he can't put him away, he's going to be in for a long 15 minutes, because Matt Brown is a guy that won't go away unless you get that ref stops that fight for sure, or you tap him out. But we'll more about that a little bit later on. Also on the card, Nate Diaz taking on Josh Thompson. It's a battle of the Bay Area bragging rights. Looking forward to seeing that those guys go down. But in the co-main event, we got Frank Mir taking on Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier obviously should have been on the show numerous occasions for some reason or whatever. Neither Igor nor myself can ever hook it up. We try, but whatever. We have a quote here from Daniel Cormier, actually a clip here from Daniel Cormier, because he keeps getting asked the same thing over and over again. Will he drop down to 205 no matter what happens here with Frank Mir? Here's what he had to say.
You know, I've got such an important fight on my hands in this next one that I really try, and I've kind of strayed away from that thought process. You know, I'm not really thinking about the 205-pound division right now. I've stated time and time again that I want to be the UFC champion, and if that means going down to the weight below, then I would do that. But I have the toughest fight of my career in front of me in 2 weeks, and I can't focus on that right now.
People jumping ahead to conclusions, you know, it always makes me laugh. Like, the guy's fighting Frank Mir, a guy that'll take your limbs home and snap them off, and he's going to focus on going to 205? Like, people got to stop asking these questions, because I know it potentially it's a legitimate question. I understand that, but he's fighting Frank Mir. Now, the other part of this is Frank Mir hasn't competed in 11 months, and he was asked that question, what do you do with this layoff?
In the heavyweight division, fights sometimes get spread out. Well, especially the higher you climb up the ladder, it's harder to find matchups that help you move forward in your career.
That is the smallest clip in the history of Frank Mir. Because when you ask Frank Mir a question, usually we have Frank Mir on this show here on UFC Central. You ask him, I got a list of questions that I want to go through, but I'm given an allotted period of time. 2 questions in, he's already blown that allotted period of time. And during this conference call, when it was going down, Frank Mir, I think, only had 2 or 3 questions asked of him, which is crazy because usually he's a main event fighter. He gets so many questions asked his way. He's moved over to Greg Jackson. He is focused. We'll see what the 11th month layoff does. I'm sure Greg and the guys and the whole guys, even Winklejohn, they'll have him ready. But against Daniel Cormier, who hits like a truck and has that pace, could be a very difficult fight for Frank Mir. I'm giving the edge to Daniel Cormier. The main event, Gilbert Melendez taking on Benson Henderson. First things first, the last time we saw Ben Henderson in the cage was against Nate Diaz, and he defeated Nate Diaz, and Melendez was there in person. And I remember Melendez at the post-fight press conference, not a happy camper, and he was asked the question specifically, are you looking to avenge that loss to your training partner?
Of course. I'd love to avenge my friend. I'd love to represent for my team. And I got to see it firsthand what Benson's all about, front row. And of course, I would love to get that for myself and for my teammate.
And of course, Gilbert El Nino Melendez, being the Strikeforce lightweight champion, was always competing outside of the UFC. He's competed in Shooto, he's competed in Japan for so long, competed under the Strikeforce banner, never had that opportunity to come into the UFC, yet has long been considered a top 3 lightweight. Some people have had him at number 1 while Frankie Edgar was the champ, when BJ Penn was the champ. He's always been considered, at minimum, a top 3 guy. So now the opportunity finally comes for Gilbert Melendez, who, by the way, has also been off for quite some time, to finally prove to everyone that he not only belongs in the big show, and he does. A win or loss, or a loss to Benson Henderson means nothing in terms of whether he belongs in that big show or not. He does belong in the big show, but now he finally gets to fight the champion, and he's got to beat him.
Champion versus champion, it's a neat thing for me, but I feel like in this case, Benson's the champ, and I'm coming to the Octagon, a new organization. I fought the dream champ. I fought the Shooto champ. I fought a lot of different champs and different rules. A neat opportunity for me. I'm definitely prepared. And I'm looking forward to the opportunity. But a long time I've been trying to prove I'm number one, and this is my opportunity. So I'm going to take advantage of it.
And, of course, that opportunity taking place in the Ultimate Fighting Championship for the first time, most guys get those jitters. I don't think a guy like Gilbert Melendez will have any jitters unless he was injured throughout the training camp and didn't, want to back out from the fight. That'll play mind games with him. And we've heard so many guys from George St. Pierre down always say it's not the best fighter that wins that evening. It's the best fighter that evening that wins. So it's not the best fighter, that wins. It's the best fighter that night who emerges victorious. So we'll see what happens there. Ben Henderson, of course, he's talking about wanting to fight George St. Pierre. He recently said he wants to fight Jose Aldo Jr. So the question, in Brazil, by the way, and the question was asked, are you looking past Gilbert Melendez?
Definitely not looking past Gilbert. Gilbert's tough as heck. He might not have the biggest name. There might be bigger fights and all that blah, blah, blah out there. But I know how tough Gil is.
And Gilbert Melendez is tough. And Ben Henderson, though, has proven time and time. Actually, I read an article somewhere, I don't know where it was, that said if he defeats Gilbert Melendez, he'll be the greatest UFC lightweight champion of all time. I'm not sure I agree or disagree with that. I've got to do a bit more research in terms of what this actually means. But this will prove yet again how awesome Ben Henderson is. There's still a lot of fights for him to take care of at 155. But don't be surprised if after this fight here, he starts talking again about moving up or moving down. I think Dana White will squash it, specifically saying, you got to clear out this division. And I think a fight with Anthony Pettis, even though Anthony's at 145, makes sense. Gray Maynard, if he gets past TJ Grant, if TJ Grant gets past Gray Maynard, that's a fight I'd like to see. So it remains to be seen what's next for Ben Henderson, but I know what's next for this show coming up after the break. My producer Igor Enriquez, you're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special guest in studio, unfortunately wearing his country's national soccer team shirt. The black, it's the third sweater of Portugal, Igor?
It's his third, the latest sweater, the black one. The soccer show was on me right before this, man. I had to represent something.
That's
UFC or soccer, one or the other.
And I've got my my Zooty shirt on. Well, it's more of a dress shirt. It's a blue dress shirt, to be honest with you. But I'm representing my Zooty. Is that fair?
That's fair.
All right. This is a special. So you know what? I might want to do this on a more frequent basis. I like the producer segment, having you come in with your topics. You know what I'm saying? Especially whenever we have to pre-record stuff and we don't have any callers, you come in with your topics and you and I will discuss.
I'm all for this.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Until you have to get John Morgan and deal with John Morgan in the line after.
John's segment. A good guy.
Speak for yourself. John's an awesome guy. John, I've been in Japan with John. He's nuts. He's awesome. All right, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, I mean, let's talk about this Fox card. I mean, this is what's coming up on Saturday. Everyone's talking about how big that Benson fight's going to be. Let's kick it off with that.
What's going to happen? Benson Henderson, Gilbert Melendez. I don't like the fact that Gilbert Melendez has been off for so long, and Benson Henderson's just the destroyer.
You see, Bendo, since he's came into the UFC, he's a different fighter than what he was in the WEC. Like, he's just turned it up a totally different level. And as much as I like Gilbert as a fighter, I just can't see anyone in that division beating Bendo right now. He's just gone in there. He's taken out pretty much. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't finished a lot of the fights, but he's done enough to get the wins, and I'm thinking that's what's going to happen in that fight. He's going to grind out another five-round victory. And again, Gilbert's, like a great fighter, but again, Benson right now is the top of the class, without doubt.
Anyone in the future? Like an Edson Barbosa, maybe?
Maybe, but I mean, they were asking Benson if he was gonna go down and fight Jose Aldo. Everyone's wanting those super fights, Joe. Everyone wants those super fights.
No. They sound good, but you got to clear your division, and I don't think he's cleared the division
no,
just yet.
No, he definitely hasn't cleared the division.
You know, I want to see what happens with Gray Maynard and TJ Grant. You know, I'm still not convinced he beat Frankie Edgar those two times because I scored him for Frankie. People can say what they want, but, you know, Frankie's at 145. I get it. It's cool.
Both fights for Frankie?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one in Japan?
I had it about one apiece. So I thought Frankie had won the second one for sure.
Trilogy belt.
I think it should happen for sure.
Yeah, I think it will happen one day. It all depends on Frankie and what he does at 145 pounds, what Benson does. I mean, there's so many things happening. I have no problem with Ben Henderson moving up to try and fight George St. Pierre. I think there's a Benson Henderson Rory McDonald fight in the future, to be honest with you, if Benson moves up.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just throwing that out there. You know, I
big,
also said.
Big size difference there.
Yeah. Well, I also said the UFC should do, you know, Women's Ultimate Fighter. You know, we all remember what Dana said to me. And lo and behold, the next Ultimate Fighter isn't all women, which I think hopefully one day will be an all-women's cast of The Ultimate Fighter, but now we have women not taking on men. There's some guy on Twitter that was all over me because I was upset that he kept saying that, why not have the men fight the women?
Oh, that's just crazy.
That
would open up a whole big can of worms. You don't want those kind of problems if you're the UFC. No way. Come on now.
I didn't know what to say to this guy. I was like, I said, thanks for your feedback. That's as best as I could do it. I mean, well, he's like, his argument was, well, they're all the same weight. They're not, man. 135 is fine, but a man is different than a woman. I mean, I see it. I've been seeing it for 20 years, you know?
I mean, Ronda trains against men, but, like, it's a different story when you're actually in there and
competing,
they're going full
yeah.
100%. That's just crazy. No
I know,
way.
I know Ronda can smash many, many guys out there, but when you get to the elite level, it's a different ball game altogether. Anyways, the next Ultimate Fighter, half the house will be men, half the house will be women. Here's why I like it. Leading up to every single Ultimate Fighter and after every single Ultimate Fighter, I talked to the guys that were in the house and the coaches and Dana, and they've all told me the same thing, Igor. You have no idea, Joe, what it's like to be locked in a house for 6 weeks with booze, with alpha males, no women. Do the math in your head if you want for a second. I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Now you're going to have 6 weeks in the house, lots of booze, men and women. This could be disaster written all over it.
Yeah, and Ronda, like, I think Ronda knows exactly what you're thinking and what most people are thinking. That's why she's basically come out and said that she doesn't want any of the females doing that kind of stuff with the males because it's going to be they're going to be seen inappropriately and it's going to give a black mark to women's MMA. So she's already put that down that she's going to tell her team that she doesn't want any of that to be going on. Will that happen? Who knows? I'm sure, like, if there are a lot of, like, single males and single females who knows, being locked up in a house together. But I think it'll come off really interesting, and I think it will bring in the ratings. I think that's going to be a lot of people watching that to see just how that goes. I know I'll be tuning in every week just to see how that really triangulates in terms of storylines.
Some badass men and women were trying out at the Ultimate Fighter tryouts in Vegas. I saw the video online. It was really, really good. The one thing about Ronda Rousey staying that, and I think she did a fantastic job in mentioning the fact that, you know what, don't do it when you're in that house because you will forever be labeled that, whatever you do. Ask Josh Koscheck, ask Michael Bisping, ask Rashad Evans, guys that have never been able to lose that bad mentality or bad image from what happened on The Ultimate Fighter. Josh embraced it. Michael embraced it. Rashad to this day tries to tell people, like, Rashad is just, none of those guys are as bad as they make it. But Josh knows, you know what, if this is what they want me to be, this is what I'm going to be. The same thing with Ronda saying that on The Ultimate Fighter. Now, I think every single girl on that show will agree with Ronda and not do anything stupid until they lose their first fight and realize, I might not get into the wild card, or I might not make it in the show. I got nothing to lose right now. My career could be over. They start getting playing mental games in there. Right, I think that's when things start getting hectic. So I think after the first couple of weeks is when we're going to start seeing if Ronda's philosophy sticks or not.
So you figure that they'll shoot for the publicity factor afterwards in case they're thinking they're going to get eliminated pretty much.
If they've lost their first fight, they don't have a chance of making that wild card. They got nothing to lose, and that guy's hot and she's hot. All right.
I still don't know what they would have really to gain out of that, though.
Nothing at all. Nothing. But human chemistry takes over sometimes. It is what it is. What else is on your mind?
These weight changes that are coming up. I think Hector Lombard was talking about going to 170, and Nate Diaz was the same thing, where he wanted to say he was going to go back to 170, which I think is a horrible idea. The last time he did that, I think it was with Rory McDonald, and Rory tossed him around and just dominated him. It's an interesting concept for both guys.
I don't like Nate Diaz moving back to 170, but I was thinking about that before I came on the air and thought to myself, is that the final nail in the coffin that says Nick Diaz will not be returning?
It's a possibility.
Right?
That would be same sort of class in terms of, I just didn't even think about that. That's actually a really good point.
It's more or less, you know what, my brother's not coming back. That division's open now. If my brother's there, there's no point in me competing in there.
Yeah, so that's a good point. But again, I just think that the way he's built, the way his size, he's a tall guy, a lanky guy, but in that against guys that are pretty big and being able to control him on the ground, I just think it's a bad division for him. He's better off at 155.
Or is it a mind game that he's playing right now with Josh Thompson, thinking, I've already got 1 foot out the door. I don't care whether I win or lose this fight. I'm going to 170, and I'm overlooking you.
Well, his reasoning is that he thinks that Gilbert Melendez is going to beat Benson, and then he won't be able to fight Gilbert because they're partners and so forth. And again, that's the whole thing with I guess Josh Cormier and Cain Velasquez, which is another situation where Cormier was asked earlier this week if he's going to be moving down to light heavyweight because of the whole Velasquez situation. But I think that might take a lot longer than people think.
Yeah, I mean, those stars have to align in such a way where, A, he still has to get past Frank Mir.
Exactly.
Velasquez still has to beat Bigfoot Silva. It doesn't matter what happened in the first fight. They have to fight again, and anything can happen in the second fight. So Frank Mir is a dangerous opponent for Daniel Cormier. Bigfoot proved that, you know what, he's not that difficult to beat sometimes. Yeah, Cain did so pretty easily and pretty brutally, to be honest with you. Yeah. But at the same time, it's a second fight. Anything can happen, right? And Cain Velasquez was on UFC Central at one time saying, listen, if Cormier and I have to fight, we'll only do it if it's for a title. Hint, hint. Maybe they will fight.
It's a possibility. And then there's still other fights in terms of Dan. Even if he beats Frank, you can still match him up against an Alistair Overeem. Yeah. You can still match him up against Junior DeSantos. There's still some fights that he would have at the heavyweight division before he would get to Cain if it came down to that. So there's still a lot out there for him.
Speaking of Alistair Overeem, what do you think about Alistair Overeem versus Travis Brown?
You know what? I was very, very disappointed with Alistair against Bigfoot. I thought he was going to win that rather handily. I think considering Travis did what he did to Gabriel Gonzaga, it would be a fight that would make a lot of sense. I'm still hoping to see that the Alistair Overeem fight against Junior DeSantos because there seems to be some bad blood between those two. But again, I guess in terms of natural progression, that would be a fight that could lead up to the Junior DeSantos fight. So, I mean, it would be an interesting matchup for sure. I just hope that Alistair brings what Alistair can bring and not what he did against Bigfoot, because to me, that wasn't the Alistair Overeem that I was expecting and most people were expecting.
Uriah Hall. So many people blasting this guy. First things first. I think it was on with Rahoman and Wong. And Rahoman already asked me the question, you know, I don't know how he worded it, but it was, and more or less was, is Uriah Hall the greatest Ultimate Fighter ever? I'm like, he still has to beat Kelvin Gastelum. And it's not going to be easy. So that's what sort of propelled me to on this radio station and on UFC Central last week and during our Ultimate Fighter inserts to specifically tell people, whoa. I know what Dana's doing. I called the wolf tickets and I'm hoping to get in trouble. I know what he's doing. And the facts remain. Uriah Hall is a devastating knockout artist and a finisher. But Kevin Gastelum is a finisher as well. And I tried to remind everyone, it wasn't Uriah Hall's fight to lose. It was Kelvin Gastelum's fight to lose because he's the better wrestler. He will dictate where this fight is going to take place. That's exactly what happened. But then I look back and thought to myself, well, you know what? No, Uriah Hall actually lost that fight because Uriah Hall didn't have a right game plan. He said he wanted to play in there. What do you mean you want to play in there? This is the Ultimate Fighter finale, dude. You got to go in there and destroy your opponent. That way you get that label on you all the time. Sponsors coming in left, right, and center. Your life changes completely. You can't go in there and play.
Again, I think Dana said something along the same lines where he basically sort of the hype got to him a little bit.
He said he mentally broke, and I disagree with that.
You don't think that's
no,
the case?
No, I think Uriah Hall's a killer. He just didn't have the right game plan. I think Uriah Hall will come back and prove that he's a killer.
Yeah, I mean, before entering the Ultimate Fighter, he had only lost, I think, to Chris Weidman and had another loss on his record. Like, he was
Costa Philippou.
Yeah, so he fought some guys that were already in the UFC, some guys that had already, you know, put their name up in the ranks. And again, if you look at the average UFC fan, I mean, if you're watching the Ultimate Fighter and you see those knockouts, he had the wow factor. I mean, that spin kick was an amazing knockout. You don't see that every day, especially on the Ultimate Fighter. It was definitely something that got a lot of people's attention. And I think people were just thinking that he was going to go in there and he was going to do the same thing where it was going to be a spectacular knockout and then he'd go shoot up right on the division, which wasn't going to happen. And again, like you said, the game plan wasn't there. He started dropping his hands, started getting cocky, and then he lost on basically.
Well, he did
points.
The Anderson Silva thing against the fence three times.
And like, exactly, and I mean, it's the Ultimate Fighter finale. You don't really have that kind of, you know, clout to be doing those sorts of things. But again, I think a lot of it was the hype that he had in his mind, basically.
Well, the one thing they showcased on the show a lot about Uriah Hall was the mental issues that he has. But it's not just Uriah Hall. Every single fighter out there has it. And some guys know how to deal with it. Some guys know how to channel their energy in a different way. Some guys don't. And I think Uriah Hall's only issue, in my opinion, is mental.
Well, that was coming out a lot during the show too, because he was getting into a lot of arguments with fellow tough enough competitors and so forth. So you can see that he had a lot of issues mentally. And yeah, I mean, I hope he does well because I think he, like you said, he's going to be a guy that if he puts it all together, he's going to be a real contender. But he needs a little more seasoning, and I think he just needs a little more help in terms of the mental game for sure.
Well, it'll take some time, and I think he'll be fine, in my opinion. I think he's going to have to regroup, go back to the drawing board. Everything will be fine. Thanks for coming in and doing this, bro.
Always fun.
From now on, you should get some topics together, come in here, and try and annoy me with your silliness because these shirts that you wear on the show are uncalled for. You can't come on my show and wear a Portugal shirt like that.
Anytime.
Props to my boys out there, my Portuguese pals, because they're going to rip me when I get home. All right, coming up after the break, MMA Junkies John Morgan to discuss all things mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. As always, Igor Enriquez, great job. Although he's wearing that Portugal soccer shirt, I'm still just, you guys have no idea. He does it on purpose. He specifically does it on purpose to, and he's behind the glass now, so he can't defend himself. So I got full reign here. Dylan Brown, obviously, rubbing in the fact that the Boston Red Sox are ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays. You're not rubbing it in? You're rubbing it in. Your eyes through the glass are saying, yeah, I know. The Leafs lost 5-3 to the New York Islanders. I'm depressed. But if there's one guy that can bring my mood up, MMA Junkies, John Morgan. John, what's going on, my man?
How much, brother? How you doing? Happy anniversary, I should say, huh?
Thank you, sir. 6 years on the air, mainstream radio. Canada rules, baby.
Incredible, man. The towel pool must be pretty shallow there.
That is steep. That is low. That is uncalled for. And I offered to buy you a drink the next time I see you. I'm taking that offer back.
I don't blame. I'm just kidding, man. Obviously, you're one of the best in the business, brother. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, listen, you're one of the best for a reason. You work for, you know, USA Today, MMA Junkie. And are you actually in San Jose right now?
I am. Yes, I am.
What's the vibe like down there?
It's good, man. You know, it's a little different. Obviously, you've been to several UFC events, Joe, and you know how it goes out. It's a little bit different fight week. As you know, they've been kind of playing with the schedules a little bit lately. So we didn't get any real fan involvement yet, and we won't see that until the weigh-ins. You know, everything's been closed to the fans and just open to media. But I can tell you among the media itself and among the public that I have ventured out to and talked to, there is a buzz about the event. I mean, I think it's one of those events that's pieced together really well, especially for the local market. I mean, here in San Jose, the HP Pavilion, former home of Strikeforce, and you come heavy with a lot of former Strikeforce fighters, guys that made their name in the market. So, you know, Dana White today at the scrum and talking to us said, hey, listen, you know, that's just kind of all a coincidence how it came together like that. I'm not so sure I believe him in this case.
No way.
You know, I think this card is built fantastically for San Jose. It's built fantastically for Fox. And, man, on paper, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Anything stand out for you over the past couple of days in terms of something that someone may have said?
You know, it's been interesting to talk to everybody as far as, you know, Daniel Cormier and his potential move to 205 after this fight is very intriguing. You know, been great talking to Frank Mir a couple of days along the way and picking his head about what the trip to Greg Jackson's was like for him. So I think that's a very, very intriguing fight. I think people are kind of overlooking Frank Mir to a degree in some way, which is kind of wild. I mean, all the buzz surrounding Daniel Cormier, and rightfully so, but let's not forget Frank Mir, you know, a former UFC heavyweight champion who's kind of reinventing himself in Greg Jackson. So that matchup to me is really standing out. And, of course, you know, Vincent Anderson and Gilbert Melendez, I mean, how fun is this? And, you know, hardcore fans have known Gilbert Melendez for a long time. It's one of the top five, you know, lightweights in the world. And now he gets a chance to come to the UFC and prove his worth. And you know, in talking to him today, he said, you know, he admitted, look, this one fight right here, you know, either legitimizes everything that I've done up to this point, or it gives everybody fuel to doubt me and say that, hey, I never belonged here in the first place. So what an intriguing contest that is.
I wonder about the mind games inside of Gilbert's head, because Jake Shields lost to George St. Pierre. Nate Diaz lost to George St. Pierre. Or Nick Diaz lost to George St. Pierre. Nate Diaz lost to Ben Henderson. He's the fourth guy. I mean, Gil Castillo, you can go back then with the Cesar Gracie camp. None of these guys have ever won that title. David Terrell. And here's Gilbert Melendez. It's almost like the last guy, the last of the Mohicans that has a chance to finally win something for Cesar Gracie. Do you think that's going to put pressure in his brain?
Hey, you know, probably a little bit. I think he addressed that a little bit today and said, look, I do want to represent well for Cesar Gracie, of course. You know, we haven't always got it done in the biggest of fights. But, you know, this is a personal mission for him. And it's going to be a tough one. But, you know, I think he's a tough in the big fights. I mean, we see it over and over, Joe. You know, UFC jitters, octagon jitters, whatever you want to call them, certainly are a very real thing, no matter where guys have fought. But can you think of a better scenario than this? I mean, how many times has Gilbert Melendez been in San Jose, you know, fought at the HP Pavilion? He's familiar. He made a joke today. You know, there's a hockey game going on at HP Pavilion today. So during the media session today, it was obviously chilly a little bit in the building because of the ice rink. And Gilbert Melendez joked that he's so comfortable, he knew that he needed to bring a sweater to the media session because it was going to be chilly in the media room. So, I mean, really, if there is a more comfortable UFC debut, I can't think of one. I mean, I think everything sets up on a tee for Gilbert Melendez to feel comfortable in this situation.
Well, speaking of Chile, speaking of hockey, speaking of Canadians, Jordan Mean. Have you had a chance to run into Jordan?
Boy, that guy, you know, talking about Chile, that guy is cool as a cucumber, man. This guy, for his age, just absolutely incredible. He's so comfortable. I mean, not only did he look fantastic in his UFC debut, I mean, he just absolutely pieced up Dan Miller. And one of the best UFC debuts ever. I think it was incredible. I mean, people are talking about Conor McGregor as one of the best UFC debuts ever, but that Jordan Meehan performance was not too bad. So just looked so calm and collected in there, just methodic in his work. And then, you know, at just 23 years old, he has no problem in front of the camera. He has no problem talking to the media. You know, him and Matt Brown got up there today for a photo opportunity, a stare down. Neither one of them budged. It was kind of funny. I think it really is completely non-indicative of how this fight is going to play out, because they both just kind of stood listlessly in front of each other and, you know, didn't really make any eye contact or look at each other. So, but he is ready. I think Jordan Meehan is dialed in yet again. And, man, what a chance this guy has to propel himself quickly in the division.
You're listening to John Morgan right here on UFC Central Radio. He's the lead staff reporter for MMAJunkie.com, MMA writer for USA Today Sports, co-host of MMAJunkie.com Radio, and a columnist and staff writer for Fighters Only Magazine. You can follow John on Twitter at MMAJunkieJohn. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Let's move back 1 week, John, and talk about Uriah Hall, Kevin Gastelum. Now, what we tried to do here on last week's radio show and during last week's television show was trying to remind people, I don't know if I got in trouble for saying wolf tickets because I said these are a bunch of wolf tickets that are being sold right now, but stop with this greatest, you know, Uriah Hall is the greatest Ultimate Fighter ever. The guy hasn't won the show yet, and in my opinion, and I talked to Igor Enriquez, my producer, during our last segment, was this was Kevin Gastelum's fight to lose, not Uriah Hall's fight to lose, in my opinion, based on the wrestling. That's what unfolded, but the conversation was, what happened to Uriah Hall? Was it a mental issue?
I think it was completely a mental issue. I mean, you're right. The guy was anointed the next great thing far too early. But I don't think it was all manufactured hype. You know, it wasn't just Dana White coming up with this guy and pushing him to the forefront. I mean, the highlights that he put on during his time on the house, how could you not buy into the Uriah Hall hype at least a little bit? I mean, let's be honest, even with this loss, I mean, I don't think any of us would sit here and say, hey, this guy's done. I mean, he's definitely a UFC-level talent. I think he's got wins in his future. But I think it absolutely was a mental thing. I spoke with Uriah after the press conference and everything and try to get a feel for him because he really wouldn't say much during the presser about, you know, what was going on. But he did say, you know, hey, I just hesitated. I couldn't pull the trigger. I need to get a little nastier in there. UFC President Dana White today said that the Hall's cornerman told him after the fight that he just liked Kelvin Gastelum too much, and that made it difficult for him to go in there and execute because he thought the guy was a friend. And Dana said, well, hey, man, some friend you are. You just gave the guy a motorcycle. You know, you gave him the luxury of being the tough champion. And something else he pointed out, it was brought up in the media scrum today, a conspiracy theorist who drive me absolutely nuts. that said that Hall might have thrown the fight a little bit.
Oh, I got that on Twitter as well.
Yeah, to get an opportunity to sign a UFC contract. And Dana said, hey, guess what, dummy? He's still under the tough contract because he's on the Ultimate Fighter. And not only that, it's a worse contract because he's not the winner, so he lost money by losing the fight. So take that conspiracy theory and blow it out of the water. So, you know, it all boils down to me that, first of all, and you said it, Joe, you hit the nail around the head, wrestling, man. In this day and age, 20 years later after the UFC all began, wrestling is still incredibly important. And I think Uriah Hall is still a little bit deficient in that area. And I think that was a huge part of it. And again, Kelvin Gastelum, a great story now. And I think Uriah Hall still got some UFC wins ahead of him, but he's got some mental hurdles he needs to get over.
Yeah, and Igor, by the way, you mentioned about Hector Lombard going to 170, potentially Nate Diaz going up to 170. We forgot to mention Kevin Gastelum potentially going down to 170. I think this kid belongs at 170 because based on his body type, and I noticed the water around his hips, that's a guy that should be cutting down to 170, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to be a good fit for him. It's funny, Joe. You know, when this season began, being a local Vegas resident, I had the opportunity to go after the elimination fight and meet the 14 cast members and interview them, before the show really got underway, just after that first elimination fight. And, I walked away from those interviews thinking, man, this is going to be a great season. There's some really good fighters in the house. It turned out to be that. But I'll be honest with you, Kelvin Gastelum was not on my short list of potential winners. So, kudos to him for being the underdog all season long. Chael Sonnen said it a couple times. He told me personally that, man, he was just blown away by Kelvin's work ethic and how much he progressed and how much he wants it. So, kudos to Kelvin Gastelum for pulling off a monumental upset, not just in the win over Uriah Hall, but, you know, getting through the whole season.
Three things I want to bring up to you also that happened on that show, but I'll give you two right off the bat. The third one I'll leave to the very end to get your opinion because you may or may not disagree with me. We'll start off with the first two. A, Travis Brown, do you think those elbows were illegal? B, was the Misha Tate, Kat Zingano fight stopped early?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know that's been the big controversy, and I thought both calls were okay. Travis Brown, I talked to referee Chris Tione. I happen to know Chris fairly well because he refs a lot of amateur fights in Las Vegas under the Tough Enough banner where I actually do color commentary. So I see him quite often at those events. And so I pulled him over to the side. I said, Chris, tell me about those elbows. What did you see? And he said, first of all, they all went to the temple. He said they did not hit the back of the head, at least until a knockout blow. Secondly, he said they were not 12-6 elbows. Simply because, Travis Brown had to lean over a little bit. And I know you've gone through the training It's kind of funny. A 12-6 elbow is almost hard to throw. I mean, if it's 12-01 to 6-31 or whatever, it's not 12-6. So he said, no, they weren't illegal. He said, you know, maybe Gonzaga's head turned when he went out, and when the head turned and he went out, maybe one more blow hit him there. But Travis Brown was not intentionally targeting that area. He was not throwing with the intent of hitting the back of the head. So he said no problem there. And, the Tate Zingano stoppage, I guess part of the sportsman in me would have liked to see maybe two or three more blows, simply because, to be honest with you, I think Misha Tate was gassed at that point. I think she was rocked, and I think she was done. And I think Kat Zingano was well on her way to getting a definitive finish. But as it stands, I don't think it was the worst stoppage ever. I mean, Tate was taking a lot of damage. I know she said she was, you know, shooting in, but it didn't necessarily look that way. It looked like she had, you know, the elbow rocked her, and then the knees came in and was just tearing up her face as well. So I was okay with it.
And the final thing I want to discuss before we got about 2 minutes here exactly, rule number or foul number 27 under the Unified Rules of Mixed Martial Arts. I'll kind of abbreviate it for you, but it simply states, let me try and find it here. It should be noted, when a fighter is placed into a submission hold by their opponent, if that fighter is capable of elevating their opponent, they may bring the opponent down in any fashion they desire because they are not in control of their opponent's body. What? Josh Siman was caught in an armbar by Kevin Casey, was able to pick him up and purposely drop him on his head. Last time I checked, he's in control.
You know, I get what you're saying, but I'm okay with it. I mean, that takes away, that takes away an escape opportunity. I mean, if you think about it, we would never have the famous, Quentin Rampage Jackson, I guess, although it's not, you know, directly on the head. It was, you know, the back. But
yeah, that's a little different, though, right?
The opportunity to let go. No, it is a difference. It's not a spike. It's the back of the head. It's not a spike, so it's not compressing the spine. But I'm okay with that rule. I think, if you're holding that arm bar, it's your choice if you want to let go of it or not.
We should have discussed this. We should have discussed this at the beginning of the segment because I got to wrap this up. But we will discuss it when I come and see you probably in Vegas. Are you going to Jersey or New York for the next show?
No, I'm not. I did Sweden. I did Vegas. And I'm doing this. And now I'm going to spend a week at home with my 11-month-old son and my wife. So we'll have Matt Erickson and Steven Morocco on scene out there in New Jersey.
All right. So it will get ugly when I come to Vegas in May, my friend.
All right, man. And the rule you need to get rid of is that grounded opponent rule. Focus on the right one, man. Hand on the ground, so.
You know what? We will save that for another day, John. Thank you very much, my man.
Thank you, Jonas.
There you have it, MMA Junkie John. Follow him on Twitter at MMA Junkie John. Special thanks to Igor Enriquez, to the boys we heard earlier on. Thanks to everyone, and of course, thank you to the Fan 590 for having me on the air. 6-year anniversary today. Thank you to Dylan Brown behind the glass. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.